This recording is a production of Faith Builders. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2013, held at Faith Builders on August 6 through 9.
Do you ever hear or read these stories about teachers like Marva Collins, or Jesse Stewart, or Guy Dowd? These people who moved to the inner city or to some village out in the boondocks somewhere, and they start these schools in their basements with 80 disrespectful, poverty-stricken, illiterate 12-year-olds. And after 6 weeks, these students are writing sonnets in French, and they're solving quadratic equations, and they have this passion for learning that's been ignited within them. And these teachers do this for 65 years. I hate those stories. I am Peter Gertzen. I am originally from Oregon. I live now in Watsontown, Pennsylvania. I teach at Maranatha Christian School there, mostly high school social studies classes and a few other odds and ends. My wife Rachel is here with our two boys, and I feel really blessed to be here, especially because Faith Builders is an institution that's done a lot for me personally. I owe a lot of what I am today to Faith Builders, and I'm really blessed to be able to hopefully give a little bit back. Now, there are so many things that we have to do as teachers, so many things that we need to do well, and this can wear you out so quickly. Just like a dish rag that's been wrung out, where there is nothing left. I quit teaching 5 years ago because I was one of these exhausted people. I had nothing left. I was a failure as far as I was concerned. I had a lot of difficulties that I didn't feel like I had dealt with very well. And so it was time for me to quit, and I did. I was so glad, it felt great to leave that behind. And not that there hadn't been anything good about teaching for me, but I just had enough. There was nothing left that I could do. Thankfully, that only lasted about 2 years. I started teaching about 3 years ago. I feel like I've learned a few things. And I think I'm a better teacher now than I was then. And I hope I can share a few of those things with you today. The basic principle is to know your limits, but don't limit yourself. We have to realize that there's only so much we can do. Our resources are limited. You have limited time. You have limited energy. You have limited knowledge. You have limited wisdom. You are a human being. You are not omnipotent. You are not all wise. And we may as well admit it. There's nothing that we can do to change the limited nature of our resources. And there's a sense in which that is completely okay. We were never intended as individuals to do everything. God gave you a unique set of gifts and talents. Not every gift and every talent, but a unique set of them. There are things that you can do. There are things that you can do well, but you can't do everything well. And that's fine. That's okay. We need to learn to accept that. But at the same time, we can only do so much, but we can do all things through Christ. We should recognize our limits, but not limit ourselves. Maybe a better way to say it would be not to limit the power of God working in us. Because God can and will do amazing things through you. A couple of months ago, I was talking to a friend of mine and his wife, and they were both teachers for many years. Steve Brubaker this morning, he talked about collective nouns for teachers. The one I came up with is a gripe of teachers. And I was griping a little bit. I was actually raving a little bit in the vein of the way I started this presentation with these super teachers who do all these amazing, wonderful things, and how I don't feel that's just not realistic. Come on. That doesn't really happen. And my friend's wife, her name is Sue, I could tell as I was talking, going on about this, Sue wasn't happy with what I was saying. I could just tell by her expression, her body language, she did not like what I was saying. And finally I said, Sue, you don't really like what I'm talking about here, do you? And she said, no. Because she said, I have experienced that. I know what it's like to take literally like a mud hut full of students who have nothing. She taught for many years in third world countries. Students who have every disadvantage that you could possibly think of. And to see these students learn and do amazing things with nothing. I know that can and does happen because I've experienced it. That is real. That's not just something that you read about in books. That is not unrealistic. That was really good for me to hear. I can be really cynical sometimes. And to the extent that my cynicism diminishes my vision of what the power of God can do, that's wrong. We need to be realistic. I think even my friend Sue would say, not everybody is going to do that all the time, but don't let that deceive you into thinking that it will never happen or that you can do nothing. God does amazing things. And God will do amazing things through you by equipping you to do those things. There will be things that God will call you to do, and God will equip you for your calling. You might not have everything you need right now to do the things that you wish you could do, or even the things that you feel like you must do, but God will give you those things. He's promised to do that. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. So know your limits, but don't limit yourself. That's the basic principle behind what we'll talk about today and also tomorrow. Secondly, you need to know your strengths and your weaknesses. When you know your strengths and weaknesses, you've learned a lot when you start to understand that. For one thing, you know where you need to concentrate your efforts. So for example, I am a very poor disciplinarian. I'm a pretty easygoing guy, and if you're in my classroom on any given random moment, chances are that my students will be all over the place. Discipline is just not something that comes naturally to me. That is one of my weaknesses. I know that if I am going to be, or if I'm going to have adequate discipline in my classroom, that is something that I need to put an extra dose of those limited resources I have towards. That's something I need to spend extra time thinking about. That's something I need to put extra energy towards. On the other hand, I teach mostly history classes, geography, that kind of thing. I love that stuff. I think it's great. It's something I think is interesting. Ever since I learned to read, I've been reading books about that kind of thing for fun. So I have a pretty good background in the knowledge, the material. I pretty much know that stuff. I don't need to spend a lot of time or as much time being familiar with my material. It would be a lot better for me. I will be a more effective teacher if I put my resources towards maintaining discipline in my classroom rather than becoming more familiar with my material. Now, what do you think I would rather do? Oh, I'd rather, work on my third doctorate and all this stuff I think is fun, rather than think about how I'm going to have discipline in my classroom. But if I know my strengths and weaknesses, if I face up to them, then I know this is where my resources need to go. Now, something about strengths and weaknesses, this is not necessarily something that you enjoy or something that is easy for you. That's not necessarily your strength. Your strength is what you are successful at. You don't measure strength by what's enjoyable or by what's easy. You measure your strength by success. When I was in school, I did not like math. I wasn't particularly good at it. I've always enjoyed English. I like writing, I like literature, that kind of thing. So when I started teaching, I figured I'll probably like teaching English, and I'll probably do pretty good at that. Math, that's probably going to be something that's going to be a real chore for me to teach, and I don't know if I'll do very well at it. Well, lo and behold, I start teaching, I find out I am a lousy English teacher. I don't know why, but I have a very hard time teaching English well. It's very difficult for me. I actually am sort of a decent math teacher. And that was really kind of a surprise for me. I'm not sure just why that is, but that's the way it is. Teaching English is one of my weaknesses. Teaching math is maybe not my strongest strength, but it's something that I do reasonably well at. So it's not what you like, it's not what's easy, it's what you're successful at. That's how you measure your strength. And once you know what your strengths and weaknesses are, besides knowing where to put your resources, you can know what you should try to do at the exclusion of other things. You should try to fit your work to your strengths. For example, then, I should teach math instead of English when I have the opportunity to choose what I'm going to teach. Stephen Gingrich this morning, he said some good things about trading work with your colleagues, the other staff members in your school. Maybe you like teaching phys ed. Maybe you don't like teaching music, or I should say, maybe you're successful. I'm not even going by what I put here. Maybe you're not very successful at teaching physical education, but you are successful at teaching music. Well, see if one of your co-teachers can teach phys ed for you when you teach music instead. Maybe you enjoy planning programs, Christmas programs, that kind of thing. But it seems like when you try to plan a field trip, it always goes wrong. Well, tell your co-teacher, I'll plan your Christmas program if you can take care of my field trip. See if you can do stuff like that. It'll make your life easier. It'll help you be more successful. Now, I realize you can't always do this. Fitting your work to your strengths is not always something that is possible for us. Some things you just have to do, whether you're good at it or not. I have to have discipline in my classroom. It is not one of my strengths, but it's something I must do. If I don't work on that, if I don't do something to maintain discipline in my classroom, you can imagine what will happen. I just have to do it. Strength or weakness doesn't matter. You've got to do the best you can. And sometimes there are structures in your school where even if theoretically you could rearrange some things to emphasize your strengths and minimize your weaknesses, the structure of the school is such that it's not really possible. The administration or the board might have decided, for example, each teacher must plan his own field trip. You can't have other people take care of your field trips for you. That's just the way it is. Sometimes you just have to deal with things like that. But as much as you can, camp on your strengths. Do things that you are successful at, and let other people take care of the things that are your weaknesses, if those are their strengths. Know your strengths and weaknesses. Follow the textbook. When I started teaching, my first year of teaching, And based on what I said a little bit ago, you'll know right away that this was not a good plan. But I had all kinds of wonderful ideas for my English class that I was going to teach. Oh, it was going to be great. I had all these great ideas, this stuff that I was going to do. My students were going to read great literature, and they were going to write great literature. They were going to learn all kinds of things. It was going to be fabulous. Oh, we were going to have so much fun. It was going to be wonderful. Well, that didn't really happen. What happened instead was we kind of stumbled our way through the Abeka Grammar and Composition Workbook, is how it turned out. It would have been a lot better if I would have simply, at the beginning of the school year, instead of thinking, oh, I've got all these great plans, if I would have just followed the textbook. It would have been so much easier. That's because textbooks, generally speaking, have been written by pretty smart people. The person who wrote this textbook is somebody who knows what he's talking about. These are people with knowledge and experience. They know what they're doing. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. Textbooks usually come with a lot of really good suggestions, things that you wouldn't have thought of, that you can put to practice in your classroom, that can help you be more successful, particularly in the teacher's guides. Get teacher's guides if they're available for your curriculum. Most teacher's guides have a lot of really good suggestions for activities and assignments that you won't find in the student text. They literally have the answers, literally, in those teacher's guides. Often they'll have whole lesson plans there for you. And it can make your life so much easier as a teacher if you take advantage of these resources. Also things like the test booklets that most curriculum publishers put out. Instead of making your own tests, get these test booklets. And just give those to your students. Make your life so much easier. So people have done a lot of work for you already, if you just know where to look for it. On the other hand, the time comes when you have to ditch the textbook. Textbook writers are not you. They do not necessarily understand your circumstances or your priorities. I have found, for example, that the questions at the end of the sections in textbooks that students are supposed to answer, after a while I thought, you know what? I can write better questions than that. So I do that. I make my own worksheets. I make my own tests and quizzes that correspond to what I've actually taught in the classroom, because I found that there are some things that I think are important that are maybe a little bit different than what the people who wrote the textbook think is important. So if I give them these pre-printed tests and quizzes, it's about stuff that my students haven't really spent a lot of time talking about, because I didn't think it was that important. So I make my own quizzes and tests. Don't do this to start out. When you're starting out in particular, just follow the textbook, go with the flow. Don't try too hard. But as you get more experience, as you gain confidence, then you can strike out on your own and tailor your classes to your needs and your students' needs. So there's a bit of a balance to be had here. Don't try to do too much. Take advantage of the things that have been done for you. But when you get to the place where you can do things better, then do them better. Because that day will come. It probably won't come right away. If I had to teach another English class now, which thankfully I don't have to, somebody else in my school teaches English, but if I had to, I could probably do some of my own stuff and do a lot better than I did my first year. That's just a matter of experience. It'll come. Let it come. Until then, take advantage of what's already been done for you. And then there are the days when you have to win. You have something going on in the weekend. You leave school 10 minutes after the bell rings on Friday, and you go off to another state somewhere. You get home 12:30 Monday morning, You wake up an hour before school starts. You're not prepared for the day. And you know what? Sometimes that's fine. That just happens sometimes. It's okay. Sometimes. You should only have to do this occasionally. If you find yourself having to wing it, by which I should maybe make sure you know what I mean, just going up to your podium at the beginning of the class period, having almost no idea what you're going to do for that class period, that's going to happen sometimes. It shouldn't happen very often. If this is happening more than just occasionally, there is something wrong. It might be something that's out of your control, but there's something wrong if you find yourself unprepared for class on a regular basis. But sometimes, it's okay. When you get home at 12:30 Monday morning, after a long weekend away, don't stay up until 5 trying to get ready for school on Monday. Go to sleep. One day of just winging it isn't going to ruin anything. It's okay. Sometimes. Occasionally. But when you do have to wing it, wing wisely. You can wing it in such a way that your students still learn something. Maybe even learn some things that they wouldn't have learned if you would have been more prepared. First of all, you have to have a plan. And this means that before you even know that you're going to be gone for the weekend, you should know what you're going to do on the days when you're not prepared for class. Next week, before school even starts, you should sit down and think about what you're going to do when you're not prepared for each one of your classes. Have a plan ready. And obviously, you don't know exactly what the circumstances are going to be, but have a basic idea of the type of thing that you can do when you're not prepared. And the most important part of planning to be unprepared is to make sure that you have a goal in mind. The easiest thing to do when you're not prepared is, okay, class, today we're going to have extra recess. And you will be a hero. Oh, your students will cheer. They'll think it's great. They'll be in a good mood the rest of the week. And sometimes that's even, I do that sometimes. And that's even okay. I try to do that when I feel like my students have earned it and they know they've earned it. We do something like that sometimes. But you can wing it in such a way that something good is still accomplished. But if that's going to happen, you have to have a goal in mind. So even if you don't really have anything else planned, you should still have some idea of what you want your students to learn during that time. So have a plan. Make sure there is a goal with your plan. This is what I do. My fallback when I'm not really prepared, when something comes up and I have to have class like right now and I don't really know what's happening, posters. I have my students make posters. There's a whole bunch of poster boards that we keep in our office. So I grab the poster boards, I grab some markers or colored pencils or whatever, and okay, today we're going to make posters about whatever we're studying. So you can make posters about what you're studying in science or what you're studying in history, whatever. Say, okay, make a poster about the Crusades. Make a poster about photosynthesis. Whatever it is they're studying right now, have the students make posters. This solves all kinds of problems. It keeps the students busy, learning something, reviewing something that they've already learned, or maybe even learning something new. You have stuff you can put in your bulletin boards then later. It addresses different learning styles. Maybe than what you're usually addressing. Instead of dealing with words, students are dealing with images more, which is good for them. So that's my fallback. I have them make posters. That's something you can do. But come up with your own plan of what you're going to do when you don't have time to prepare. It can be done. With a little bit of practice, with just 5 minutes of preparation time, you can come up with something that might not be ideal, that might not be the best you can do theoretically, but it'll be pretty good. And the students will learn something, and you'll get to the next day. Next, You need to acknowledge your limitations and failures. Don't pretend that you're anything more than a human being. Everybody knows it. It's okay. Sometimes you're going to make mistakes. Sometimes you're going to do something wrong. It's fine. I mean, it's not, but it is. Own up to it. Say, yeah, I made a mistake. I didn't do that right. There are lots of ways that you can apply this principle. For example, every now and then, I make a threat that I live to regret. You two back there, you stop talking right now or else. Along those lines. Or the next person who talks is going to. And then a few minutes later, I realize, oh no, that was an overreaction. Remember, I'm not very good at discipline. Sometimes I just kind of let things go, which isn't good. Sometimes I overreact, which also isn't good. Well, what do you do then? Now, we're supposed to be consistent in our discipline, right? We're supposed to carry out what we say we're going to do. We're supposed to follow through in things. Well, what if what I said I would do isn't really a good thing to do? Well, I found it's better to go back and say, you know what, I shouldn't have said that. You will gain more respect by admitting that you were wrong rather than following through on something that you shouldn't have said you were going to do. That can be difficult sometimes. Sometimes you do need to follow through. It's difficult to know the difference. Another example. When you are dealing with some kind of behavior problem, I found it very helpful to make observations instead of accusations. I am not omniscient. Just because I think I see something doesn't necessarily mean that it happened. If I insist that there was a problem when there really wasn't one, that can be really damaging. And this can also kind of head off at the pass the lawyerliness of some students. I have one student right now in particular. I tell him that I saw him talking to the student next to him during class when he wasn't supposed to. Well, no, I didn't say anything to him. And you go on and around about this. Well, I have found, and this is kind of where I learned this, was with this particular student. Instead of saying, you talk to Bobby next to you there, say, this is what I saw. I saw you turn your head. I saw your lips move. I heard something. Therefore, I came to the conclusion that you talked to Bobby. Maybe you didn't. But that's what I observed. Acknowledge your limitation there. That's really effective. That's really effective. Or maybe you see an attitude problem with a student. I found that instead of saying, you have this attitude problem, instead say, this is what I see. I observe this, and I observe this, and I observe this. Maybe I'm wrong. Only you and God know what is really in your heart. I hope that you do not have this problem. I really hope you don't. I don't actually know for sure whether you do or not, but when I observe these things, this is the conclusion that I come to. I found that to be a very effective way of talking to students about attitude problems. And that comes out of acknowledging my limitations. I am not all-powerful and all-knowledgeable. But I can see some things, and if you address things on that basis, it can really save you a lot of headaches. And a big part of this is apologizing when you need to apologize. I have come to love apologizing to my students. It does wonders in maintaining respect and keeping a positive atmosphere in the classroom. Even when an apology might not be technically necessary. If the students think it's necessary, then it probably actually is. Even if you had a good reason for what you did, even if you're completely justified, you can still say, well, I understand why you would feel that way. I'm sorry, I'll try to do better next time. Something where this seems to happen to me pretty often is I'll give a quiz to a student, and they'll say, after they're done with the quiz, and we correct it there in class, we didn't talk about that yesterday. Was this on our worksheet? And you know what? Sometimes I look at that, and I look back at the worksheet. You know what? We didn't really talk about it yesterday, or we talked about it in a little different way. Or maybe, yeah, we did talk about it, but you can kind of understand why the student wouldn't have caught it. Apologize. Say, I'm sorry. Yeah, I can see what you mean there. And then often what I'll do is I'll do something like, tell you what, let me give you a bonus question. If you can answer this, then it'll cancel out your wrong answer on that one there. Something like that. Do something to meet them halfway. It'll build your credibility. It'll make your students respect you. Now, there are times when you have to stick to your guns. Not every complaint that students have is legitimate. Sometimes you are right and they are wrong. And you need to stick to your guns. You need to say, no, this is the way it is. I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm sorry you don't think it's fair. This is the way it is. You can say that kindly. And once again, this is hard to know how to deal with. This takes wisdom to know when to back down, when to stand firm. I can't tell you how to do that. But we'll talk about that more here in just a couple of minutes. Also, there will be a lot of times when you just have to move on. You will have bad days. They will come. You will have bad weeks and bad months and even bad years. But they will end. There will be a new day. So move on. This is something I've had to learn. I used to sit and stew about the bad day when it's over. Oh, I could have done this differently. I could have done that better. Oh, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I say that? That's really counterproductive for me. You need to do that to a point. Learn from your mistakes. But there comes a point where you just have to say, you know what? This was a bad day. Tomorrow, I'm going to do everything I can to not have a bad day. Just leave it at that. Move on. When you continue to dwell on the negative things that you've experienced, that'll really sap your energy. That's one of the big things that'll just wring you out. Just leave those things behind. Move on. And finally, and probably most importantly in the scheme of things, recognize that you were never intended to do anything alone. You need help because you are a limited person. We were created to work with the resources of other people added to our own. Like it says in 1 Corinthians, we're all members of one body. Some of us are feet and some of us are hands. Some of us are eyes. So you need other people. More than that, you need God. And probably the most important thing you can do to maintain your resources that you need to be a successful teacher is to pray. I've mentioned a couple of times how it is so important to have wisdom, to know how to deal with the things that you're going to face. James 1:5 says that if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. God wants to give you everything that you need to be a successful teacher. God is waiting to give these things to you. If you ask, you will receive. Like it says later in the book of James, if you're not getting what you need, it's probably because you haven't asked for it. If you have asked for it and you're still not getting it, you're probably not really asking for the right thing. You're probably asking for something that will make you feel good rather than what you really need. And you know what you really need deep down inside. Ask for those things. Ask for the wisdom, the grace, the knowledge, the energy, the help that you need. And God will give it to you. And one of the ways that he'll do that is through other people. Find somebody that you can talk to about your job as a teacher. Hopefully, ideally, this should be someone close by. Ideally, it will be somebody in your school building that you can talk to. That's not always possible. I taught for actually most of my teaching career, I taught in the school with 12 to 15 students, where I was half of the staff. And when you're almost the only person there, then there's not anybody to talk to. In that case, then you'll have to find somebody outside of school. But ideally, get to know your fellow teachers. Get to know your administrator. And you can rely on them for some of these resources that you don't have. I am blessed with a very, very fine administrator who's a good friend to me. And I'm able to go talk to him when I'm having a rough day, when I've had a discipline problem with one of my students. I can run up to his office real fast and say, Jason, I had a tough time with Billy today, this morning. I'm going to need to talk to him after school. Would you please pray for me? That could be a productive time that we could work through some of these problems. And I can be confident that he will pray for me, and it makes a difference. I have been amazed at the times when I try to go it alone, and well, I can take care of this. No, I can't. No, I can't take care of things by myself. It's a disaster sometimes. But when I do something so simple as to humble myself, go to my administrator and say, I need you to pray for me, it's amazing the difference that makes sometimes. So go to somebody. Not somebody who necessarily can have all kinds of answers for you, although there are lots of people like that out there. And if they offer them to you, take them. But just simply somebody who can pray for you. Hopefully, somebody you can talk to in your school. If not that, somebody you can call on the phone. Just find somebody to talk to. I've been amazed at the difference that that's made in my teaching. All right, we have a few more minutes here. Are there any questions or comments any of you have? I need your help as much as you could ever need mine. So I'd be glad to hear anything that you'd have to say. All right, well, that's fine. That means we can go have lunch just a little bit early, which I think is a positive thing. So let's stand for prayer.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.